Take it away, sir.
My name is Roger. I'm a grateful alcoholic. And if you would have told me 41 years ago I was going to say that, I'd say you're full of, you know what? You know, I try to keep the language down, like you said. After you read all that stuff, I don't want to say nothing. I'm afraid to speak wrong, you know? But it's not about that. It's about me. I'm up here for me. I'm up here for you, you know? If I help you, I do. If I don't, I don't, you know? That's what I learned here. And there's only a couple people that know me really here. Pat knows me for a long time. He don't know me, but he knows of me, you know? John does. You know, Ron's seen me around lately because I've been coming back to this area. I have a hard time with AA in this area, you know? That's me. It's not you people. It's me. But anyway, I like how Ron started out, told about his family. I'm one of 16 children. I'm number 12. And there's only four of us left. And the majority of them died from alcoholism. And I know this disease kills. My real father committed suicide. My mother died of cirrhosis of the liver. And my brothers all died just drinking, you know, and alcoholism. And guess what? It has nothing to do with me. My alcoholism isn't their problem. It's my problem. I learned that here, you know. I'm not here for my wife. I'm not here for my mother. I'm not here for my father. I'm not here for my sons. I'm here for me. That's where the selfish part of the program comes in. But how I got here, in February of 1969, which is 54 years ago, not 41, 54 years ago, I was sitting in the Lark Tavern, and a guy next to me says, "You need to go over there." And I said, "What do you mean over there?" He's "Go over there and go up them steps and go in there and sit." I said, "For what?" "Go over there." All right, I went over, and it was the Albany Fellowship at that time. It was the clubhouse, the old clubhouse in Albany. And I went in there, and I'm listening to these people. I said, "These people can't drink." I'm just listening. I'm laughing, too. That's the worst part about it. I'm looking to get my rear end kicked, but I was laughing at everybody up there. And believe it or not, there was a couple guys. One guy's name was Fast Eddie. He used to stand on the steps, and I'd leave, and he'd grab a hold of me and say, "Kid," I said, I was young then. I was 21. He said, "You're going to make it someday." I said, "What the hell's he, in my mind, what the hell's he talking about? I'm going to make it." Right over to Lark Tavern, drink. Next day, the same thing. Tavern, to the meeting, to the tavern. And then I stopped going to the tavern. I stopped going to the meetings, but I still drank, you know. And what happened is I had a plan. I was going to drink and kill myself. You know, that's what I was going to do, but I didn't do that. You know, it was in my mind. I wanted to back into a snowbank and let the car run and just die. But it didn't happen. Then I was in here, and these three Chinese students from RPI did the same thing that I wanted to do, and they died. And I said, "But for the grace of God, that was me. That's what I wanted to do. Back in a snowbank and let the car run." That's how sick I was, and I didn't know it. But getting back to the alcohol, I picked my first drink up when I was 12. I put my last drink, I didn't put it down. It got put down for me. I was 34 years old, and a DWI, I ran a trooper off the road. I was on my way home, 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, home. I had a home, but I wasn't going to my home. I was going to my apartment, which is up in Old Tower 1 up in Albany. It was up by where, if anybody knew where the Schaefer Brewery was, there was a little building over there. That's where I used to stay, and because I couldn't go home. I just couldn't find my way home. I used to drink at the Thatcher Pub. You know, I'd go in there in the morning, 10:30, get my tune up, go home. Well, not go home, but ride around, do my job. Go back there, get my 3:30, we call it beer 30, my beer 30 drink. Nothing wrong. I go home, then I would, at that time, I was able to go home. I would go home, and my wife would say to me, I got married in the meantime. I don't want to go to whole deal. I get home, my wife said, "Where were you?" "Working." I was working. You know, and my breath was all over. Yeah, I was working. And that'd be when I get home. I get off work at 3:30, I get home at 10:30. So that's 7 hours of drinking, you know. And I'm amazed I never got a DWI coming down from Albany. From Albany to, I live in Cooksaki. I don't know if you're supposed to say that or not in this thing. You know, I don't want to be in trouble. I don't like all that. Well, I'm not a man that follows the rules all the time, but I do follow suggestions in AA. You know, and I just keep coming here. So what happened is, on August 8th, 1982, actually 7th, 5 a.m. in the morning. I ran to Troubrelter Road, and I got into the Queenstown Court after the trooper told me, he said, I'm going to get you help. And before that happened, I got out of my truck, and he walked me back to my truck. And when he was walking away, I said, God help me. He turned around and shined a light in my eyes. He says, what'd you just say? I said, God help me. You need more help than God, and I'm going to get you all the help you need. And he took me down to Queenstown Court. I went down to Queenstown Court. I'm there. I'm waiting for the judge to come, you know. And in the meantime, I had to go to the bathroom, and the cop wouldn't let me go. He had a handcuff on me and had me to the wall. And I wanted to go to the bathroom. So I said, I told you, I got to go to the bathroom. And he came up to my face, and I vomited on him. Not knowing. I mean, it just came out of me. And he let me go to the bathroom. Then I come back in. And then he says, you're in trouble. I said, I know. And he put the cuff back on. I'm waiting for this judge. I said, I wish this judge would get here. Like every other time, this will be over. But when the judge finally came, it wasn't over with. He told me, he said, you got me out of bed this morning. They called me at 5 a.m. He says, now I'm here looking at a drunk. He says, but you know what? I'm in a good mood today. I'm going to let you do you a favor. I said, what's that? He said, I'm going to let you call your wife. I said, oh, no, that's not a very good idea. He says, you're going to call your wife. And that's when they had those speakerphone things. He said, I'll put it on speakerphone. Don't you say anything wrong. I said, listen, don't call it. He said, I'm calling her. He dialed my number. She answered. And she says, where are you? I said, Queenstown Court. She says, rot, you son of a bitch. Exactly what she said. The judge looked at me and goes, he says, I'll give you one more call. Who can you call? And I'm thinking about, who can I call? And the lady that raised me, my mother didn't raise me. The lady that raised me, I said, I'll call her. I call her my mom. I said, I'll call her, you know. I said, all right, yeah, call my mom. He says, okay. He called her. She goes, where are you? I said, I'm in Queenstown Court. And I said, they'll let me go if you come and pick me up. You know, if not, they're going to put me in jail. Okay, I'll be to come and pick you up. So then the guy says to me, okay, hang up. He hung the phone up. Well, first I had to tell her I was going to meet her at McDonald's on Route 9W in Ravenna time. So the judge, after he gets done, he says, you know, you came here with two tickets, failure to keep right and the DWI. Now you got assault charges. Assault charges for what? Vomiting on the cop. I didn't know that was an assault. That's an assault charge, you know. And then destruction of government property or state property, whatever it was, because I vomited on their bench and stuff. All the stupid stuff. I came out with 32 tickets, and I went there with two, if you know what I'm saying. To make a long story, I said, oh, man, they're after me. So what happened is I went home. I didn't go home. I was walking down to 9W to meet my mother because the judge told me, don't have her come here. Have her meet you over at McDonald's. I'm walking down 9W, and I worked on a railroad. I'm walking down to 9W, and I didn't realize this. People were blowing their horn, waving to me, and I'm waving back to them. You know, I was drunk as shit. I'm walking down there. I get McDonald's. I look down. One shoe on, one shoe, no shoe. And I'm a mess. I mean, I was really a mess. I walked in there. I ordered a coffee. The girl looks at me, you know. She gets me the coffee, and she told me what it'd be. I reach in my, no wallet. I said, oh, man, I ain't got no money. She says, don't worry about it. This happens every Sunday morning. I said, what happens every Sunday morning? I was belligerent. She goes, the judge sends people here to get picked up for DWIs. Then I felt shame. Oh, she knows why I'm here, you know. And she says, is someone coming to pick you up? I said, yes. Have them pay us. I said, okay. So my mom comes up. I see her driving up. I said, what am I going to do? How am I going to ask this woman for money? Oh, I know. I'll order her a breakfast and I'll tell her I'll get my wallet. So my mom drove up. I go out. And she goes, Roger, when are you going to grow up? I said, don't worry about it. Would you like some breakfast? She goes, yes. I said, can you do me a favor? Can you lend me the money? I said, because my wallet's in my truck, I think. She said, where's your truck? I said, they towed it because I was drunk. And she said, okay. She said, okay. So she gave me the money. I go in and give it to her. She takes me to her mother's house where I can't go because when I was drinking, I was pretty violent. I wasn't allowed to go to many places, you know. Mm-hmm. And she says, you can sleep on the porch. You can't go in that house. I said, okay. So I walk into the porch, and what, you know what I wanted to do? I wanted to go in the house and go to the bathroom. So I go to the door. My grandmother's in there. She's looking out the window like this. She's going like this. And I knew what that meant. You're not coming in here. And I knew that, you know, and I sat down. I said, what am I going to do? You know, I'm sitting there. mother says, I'll come out. She says, I'll give you a cup of coffee. I'll make coffee for you. No, the enabler. I'll make coffee for you. You just sit there till tomorrow morning. I said, tomorrow morning? I said, I can't sit here that long. She says, well, somebody's going to come and see you. I said, yeah, all right. So in the driveway, a car pulls in. And I see this guy get out with a suit on. I said, who the hell is this? The guy comes over, comes on the porch, puts his hand on my knee, which I don't like. And I said, what are you doing? He said, I got to talk to you. And he was a minister, and I didn't know. His name was Fred. And in a way, he says, you need help. I said, yes, I know. He says, do you know you're getting treated for alcoholism? I said, treated for alcoholism? I said, I'm not an alcoholic. He goes, listen to me. I know for a fact you're getting treated for alcoholism, and tomorrow morning you have an appointment at 9 o'clock at the Greene County Mental Health over, well, someone's over care over in a big building. And people that knew Irma used to be a member. Pat knows her, I believe. Some of you guys know her. Irma was in the door, and I walked in, and she goes, are you ready? I said, ready for what? She says, Roger, you're in big trouble. You need to get in treatment. I said, they already told me I was in treatment. This guy came to my house, this minister. She said, listen, you need treatment. I'm not going to get treatment. So she says, go sit in that room. So the state police are coming here this morning. And they did. They showed up. Then I got worried. You know, you get that little bit of that, what they call it, instant sobriety, they call it. Ooh, the police are here. Mental health come to see me? You know, I said, oh, geez, what's going on? So the first question they asked me is, did you drive here? And of course, I'm a good liar. No, I didn't drive here. Well, how'd you get here? I said, I got a ride with a friend of mine. He dropped me off. I got here at 8 o'clock. The appointment was at 9. I was here an hour early, lying my ass off, right? So they were talking to me, and they talked to Irma. And Irma, by the grace of God, another good alcoholic. But she also enabled me. She got rid of the police, and they didn't take me where they were going to take me. So they told me if I went to an AA meeting that night, that I probably wouldn't get arrested, you know? And it was her and I don't know, somebody else from a program. They said, here's what the meetings are. And she said, we're going to introduce you to a lady. So I went upstairs and met this lady. She was an alcoholic counselor. And I sat down in the room and all of a sudden, like a flood, I just started crying. And she says, do you think you have a problem with alcohol? Nope. I don't think I have a problem. And I didn't think I had a problem. She said, are you sure? I said, I'm positive. She said, listen, you see this book? She pulls out, see this book? I said, yeah. I'm going to circle these meetings in here. And this is what I want you to do till you come back next week. I said, all right. I said, I can do that. And she says, you sure you don't need help? You sure you don't need to go to detox? No, I'm okay, I'm gonna do it. She said, was your friend waiting for you in the parking lot? Oh yeah, he's waiting for me. So, so they let me go, she let me out. I walked by, Irma says, good luck. See you at the meeting tonight. I said, all right. I walk out and I look around, like a good alcoholic, I'm looking around. Well, where's these state police are talking about? Where's everybody? I got in the car, I drove home. Then that night, I couldn't, all day long, I wanted to drink. I mean, I wanted to drink, but I didn't drink because I knew I was in trouble. So, I grabbed two cans of those Budweiser that time. They're not the big ones like they are now. They're a little bit smaller. I grabbed two cans of Budweiser. I put them under the car seat. It was my mother's car. I put it under her seat, and I couldn't believe she let me drive. I drove to the meeting in Greenville. I pulled in the back of the parking lot of the old high school where I graduated from. And something dawned on me. This friend of mine, Robert, who I graduated with, at graduation night, he said, Roger, I want to tell you something. He said, see that building over there? I said, yeah. He says, you're going to be there. I said, for what? He says, you'll see. And he was right, you know? He was right. 17 years later, he said that 17 years before, I was walking to that building he was talking about, and it came on, the light went off. But then when I pulled in the parking lot, we were talking earlier, me and Pat, I pulled in the back of that parking lot. I had them two cans there. And all of a sudden, the car pulls in. It was Victor and another lady. I can't remember her name. She passed away last year. And I said, what's this guy doing? He started walking towards my car. I'm looking in my mirror. I said, oh, shit, I better get out. I get out of the car. He goes, you looking for the meeting? I said, yeah. He said, you see that light over there? I said, yeah. He said, that's where you go. And he kept walking toward me. And he put his arm around me. And that was it. I said, what did I get myself into? There I was, my first meeting. I went into that meeting, and the light went off like this here. I mean, it was bright. There was a guy playing a piano when I walked in. The whole room in Greenville is different now. When I walked in, it was a small room. It was a piano, and everybody put their coats on the couch. But I walked in, this guy was playing a piano. And I said, what the hell is it? And everybody was laughing in the back room, like this here. But it was narrow tables, one thing of narrow tables. And I said, where are all these people laughing at? So I go in, I sit down on that side of the table, and there was a row of people behind me, and there was a guy named Lester sitting across from me. And I kept staring at him. I thought he was staring at me. I was staring at him. He goes, what the hell are you staring at? I said, you. How did you get like that? He said, I didn't drink one day at a time. And he said, believe it or not, I came out of Washington Park. I was living on a bench up there. I said, really? He said, yes. He reaches in his pocket, grabs a phone number, puts it in my pocket. Now, this guy, I see him a lot of times. Well, I mean, I didn't call him for 6 years, but I finally called him because I needed a favor. That's why I called him. And he was getting people's jobs in AA, but a friend of mine needed a job. So Lester laughed. He says, 6 years and you call me? I said, yeah. And he says, how's your sponsor doing? I said, he's doing good. That was Tom A., who's no longer alive. You know, and Tom A., when I first went to his house, I couldn't believe it. I used to go to Leeds meeting faithfully every Friday night, and he invited me to his house one night. And when I walked to his house, I said, man, I don't belong here. In his foyer, he had a big, I forget what they call them things, a podium. And on that podium was a Bible. And he walked off after he let me in. And I'm looking at the Bible. That's the steps. And he comes back. He goes, what are you looking at? I said, that's the steps. Well, he says, where the hell do you think the program came from? I said, I don't really know. And I says, what is this? He says, it's the Bible. That's where the program came from. I said, you know, right away, I said, yeah. He says, listen, is there anything you want to ask me? I said, yes, Tom. Where is this big book they're talking about? He says, what big book? I said, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Where is that book at? Oh, you want to read the big book? I said, yes, I do. Oh, he says, I was waiting for you to ask. I'll be right back. He went out, got the big book, that little right here, a little one like this. He hands it to me. I go, well, that's not a big book. That's a little book. I'm talking about that big book. He said, that's the big book. It's called Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's when I got started that night when I went home. I started reading that book. I mean, I read it faithfully, and I said, oh, boy. And I didn't drink. Something happened that night when I woke. I did not drink. I started reading that book, and I was in the program about 2 months, and they needed a coffee maker at Leeds. He says, you want to meet some silver people? You be the coffee maker here. He says, we'll give you the key. You come and make the coffee. Oh, I said, I can't make coffee on Friday nights. Why not? My son's got Little League. He says, this ain't about your son. This is about you getting sober. Get your ass over here and make the coffee. I said, will you show me how? This is how I was. He says, we'll bring you the first night, but after that, you're on your own. So they did. Him and Arthur brought me the first night, another guy that was in AA. They brought me, and I made the coffee, and then they left me alone. That's when I started searching for that big book that I was telling you about when I said to him, where's that big book? But that's when I started searching for it. I looked up in the loft. I looked over in the back room. I said, I don't see no big book. You know, what are these people talking about? But it happened. Everybody has their own way when they get introduced to recovery. But that was my introduction to recovery. I was coffee maker for 6 months, first time. And what happened is they wanted to rotate. They used to vote down on coffee makers and stuff, you know, and we rotated. And Bill F., who used to be a member of this group, he took my place as coffee maker. And we were pretty good. We used to talk quite a bit because I still go to the meeting early and talk with Bill, you know. That's what we do. And that's how you do it in AA. Well, in the meantime, I'm still driving without a license. I hadn't even been to court yet for the DWI. I'm still driving, you know? And my sponsor says to me, you know what? You're going to get in trouble. You need to get somebody, let somebody drive your car for you. I said, who? You see that guy over there? I said, yeah. He said, he lives close to you. I think he lives about maybe a half mile from you. I said, yeah. He said, get him to drive your car. He said, just go ask him. So I went over and introduced myself. His name was Bob. A lot of people know him. He's down in Virginia now. And me and him got palling around. And I said to him, the first night that we went home, we parked in front of the place I was staying at. And I said, listen, my sponsor told me to ask you, will you take my car? I said, I haven't got a license. And he says, well, where do you work? And I told him. He said, okay. He says, I work in Albany. He says, I'll drop you off. and pick you up at 3:30. I worked 7:30 to 3:30 at the time. He says, does that sound good? I said, yeah. So I gave him the card. I didn't give it to him, but I let him, you know, he used it. And that was my first getting help in AA, because I had to ask for help. I had somebody drive me to work. So he did it. Then we became friends. And then I got hooked up with Joel V, another guy, a longtime AAer. And we got involved in the prison, going to prison speaking. We did it for 8 years straight. We did Hudson, Coxsackie, and Green. And another guy named Pat J that used to be in the Catskill group took me to Hudson one night. He says, listen, we need somebody here for the Sunday night meeting. He says, you and Joe do enough. You need to do this by yourself. I said, all right. So I went and did the Hudson meeting by myself. And about a month later, I called him up. I said, Pat, why you got me doing this meeting? He said, because you're going to be there. He says, you're sober, but you're not getting honest. And that's what you need to hear. See, people don't want to hear it no more. If I tell you you're doing something wrong, shut your mouth or I'll beat you up. Right, Ron? Isn't that how it goes? They don't want to hear the truth. They don't want to hear the truth. So I said, well, why do you think that? He said, Pat. He said, Roger, I know what you're doing. I said, listen, Pat, I'm not doing it. He said, you're going to do it again. I know you are. He said, I know how you are. You're an alcoholic. And he says, you got a lot of change. You're stark raving sober, but you got a lot of changes to make. And that's when I really said, yeah, all right. But I didn't listen. Never listened to him, you know. Never listened to Tom. Tom told me right at his anniversary. It was funny. On his anniversary, he said to me, his 25th anniversary, he says, most people need a 2x4 across their head. You need a 4x4 across your head. That's how I was arrogant, self-righteous. And I was just a mess, total mess, not drinking and doing the things, you know, opening meetings, making the coffee. I made coffee down in Catskill. I loved it. Winnie down in Catskill enabled me. Anybody, probably nobody here knows Winnie, but Winnie passed on too. But Winnie took me under her arm, and she told me a lot of things. She says, you know, you can get help for this. I said, oh, yeah, okay, Winnie. As soon as I found out somebody knew something about me, I'd go the opposite direction. You know, I'd run. I wouldn't do what they said. And finally, the light went off. After I got arrested, in sobriety, the light went off. I said, I better start working the steps. You know, I need a sponsor that's going to really beat on me. And Bill F.'s wife, Jean, called me the day after I got arrested, and she said, do you want to end up like my husband? And I said, no. That's when he was really bad. He's not, he changed his whole life around. But anyway, she said, listen to me. I'm going to give you a man's number. You call him up. She says, you'll learn about AA, and you're going to learn about more than AA. I said, all right. So she gave me a number. This was on a Tuesday night. Friday morning, 5 a.m., she calls me. Did you call George yet? I said, no, I didn't, Jean. She said, listen, I'm going out of town for the week. I'm going on vacation. And she said, I really want you to call this man because he can help you. I said, Jean, I'm not going to call nobody. She said, Roger, do me a favor. Please call him. I said, yeah, all right. Hung the phone up. That was Friday. Saturday afternoon, I was mowing my lawn. And like, I don't know if it was God. I don't know what it was. Something said, call this man. So I went and called him, and his wife answered. And I said, is George in? She goes, no, he's out mowing his lawn. I said, oh, that's what I was doing. No, should I be fair? That's what I was doing, mowing the lawn. She says, you probably need help. I said, yes, I do. She said, he will call you back. Give me your number. And I wasn't thinking. I gave her my number. I went to the Saturday night meeting in Coxsackie. I went home. It was around 9, I think the meeting there was 8:30 to 9:30. Around 9:45, my phone rings. And it was George. He goes, is this Roger? I said, yes, it is. He says, my name is George so-and-so. And he says, I understand you need help. I said, yes, I need a lot of help. He said, how long you been in AA? I said, 12 years. He said, 12 years of not drinking. And that really, I said, yeah, I you can say that. He said, listen, can you come to my office Monday morning? I said, yeah, I can come there. He said, be prepared for a journey. I said, what's he talking about? I said, yeah, okay, I'll be there. So I went there. I pull in the parking lot. And I said, this is a church? What's this guy got in his? And I see all these women going in. I said, what's this? All these women going in. I don't see no men going in this place. So I go in. I sit down. There's all women in the room. And they're looking at me, and I'm looking at them. You know, I said, what the hell? I'm not a woman. Why am I? He walks in. He goes, ladies, excuse me, this man needs a lot of help. Could you leave and come back in an hour? Every one of them got up and left. And then I went in his office and I sat down in front of him and he became my sponsor. He says to me, this is your problem. I said, what's that? He said, you're emotionally disturbed. You're not mentally ill. I said, oh, that's nice. And he says, you've been going to meetings, right? I said, yeah. He says, you might as well be going to the bar. All you're doing is exchanging the meetings for your drinking. You're not doing the work. And then he told me. And he told me stuff about me that I knew, but I thought nobody knew, and he knew. He says, this is what I need you to do. I need you to go to a meeting, just listen, stop doing any service work you're doing, and take care of yourself. He's the majority of people in Alcoholics Anonymous, they either get their CAC or their KSAT, whatever it is, and they stop working on themselves. They want to help everybody else, but they can't help themselves. And I didn't like that. You already know. You're like, so he says, you're wasting your time going to meetings. You're just not drinking. You want to change yourself? Do what I say. If not, there's the door. You can leave. As a matter of fact, get out of my office. That's exactly what he told me. I said, what? He says, get out of here. I walked out. I walked across the parking lot. All of a sudden, I hear him. Wait a minute. I was a little bit tough on you. Come on back in. Little puppy dog. I ran back in. I sat down. He says, you're an alcoholic. I said, no shit. Sorry. Yeah, no shit. I'm an alcoholic. Yeah. And he said, listen, I'm going to help you if you will let me help you. And if you'll do, forget everything you learned the first 12 years in AA and start over. Get into the steps really heavy. And we did, you know. Like there's the big book is the basic course. The blue book, the 12 and 12, that's the advanced course. And it tells us in there, you know, it's an ongoing process. Some people around here say they do step four one time, that's all they got to do. They haven't read that book. They haven't read either one of them books. Done 38 four steps in 41 years. And the last four of them were good. And the ones I did in prison were even better. Because I got a real good look at myself. I had time to be with myself. See, I had that problem when I came here. My focus wasn't on me. It was focused on my kids. It was focused on my wife. It was focused on my mom. My focus was in all wrong places. I wasn't focused on recovery. And then I learned something. In the prefix of the big book, it tells us, until you overcome the spiritual malady, you're not in recovery. You can be going to AA and not in recovery. And it stuck with me. And a guy stuck this in my pocket at a meeting in Pennsylvania and in Philadelphia. He says, when you get home, read this note. And here's the note I got from him. Spiritual malady. Without accountability, our spiritual program is incomplete and we continue to play God and give others that role. And that's where I learned about me, you know. Until you overcome the spiritual malady, you're not on the road to recovery. You can just not drink and go to meetings. That's fine. That's okay. But if you want to do the work, there's a lot of work involved, you know. And I was very fortunate to meet some of the people I met in here. You know, I met a lot of good people in here, real good people. And before I came here tonight, I had a big book, and I didn't even know it. One of my sponsees passed away 2 years ago, and his wife gave me his big book. You know, it's been sitting on my, I'll tell you where it's sitting, on my living room table, sitting there. And tonight I picked up before I came to the meeting. I opened it up. Roger, this book is yours when I pass on. That was the note that was in the book. That's spiritual. That's spiritual. And then another thing that happened, this thing here, I was in a Greenville meeting. There was a lady named Norma there. And she came when she was quite old to the program. Mm-hmm. Well, she passed away. Me and her got along pretty good. She passed away. So I can't remember when she passed away. Maybe Ron knows. I don't know if you know or not, if you remember. But she passed away. So one day I go out of my mailbox. Here's the big book in my mailbox. Roger from Norma. I said, how can that be? She passed away 2 years ago. How can that be? Spiritual. You know? Things that happen to me are spiritual, not that I made happen, you know, and I've done a lot of things wrong in recovery, you know, and shit happens in recovery, but it's me, it's nobody else, it's me. you know? And I don't blame alcohol. I like guys have been here 40 years and they still blame alcohol. Not the alcohol, it's me. The cause and condition of my alcoholism is me. It's not because my parents were alcoholics, it's not because my brothers were alcoholics, it's because I'm the alcoholic, you know? And then, them causes and conditions, if you don't get down to them, sooner or later you're gonna drink, you know? I finally got down to my causes and conditions, me, you know? And I learned it here too, and Ron said it. See, I listened intently when Ron was speaking. I made all the choices, because it tells me in this book right there, that big book, nothing in God's world happens by mistake. So as soon as I hear somebody ever saying, oh, I made a mistake, I drank. No, you didn't make a mistake, you made a choice. If you're sober, you make choices. You choose to drink, you know? Oh, I slipped. You slip on a banana peel, you know, that's a slip. But anyway, I come, I still got a sponsor. I had two sponsors pass away during COVID. And it was, to me, it was like losing a parent. Because both these guys were good to me. One was the George guy I told you about, who got me back onto the road of recovery. And the other was, I can't remember his name. I'm drawing blanks, so I had that thing once in a while that happens to me. I can see him too. But anyway, this guy was the right wrench for the nut. He knew my problem. He used to be the director of St. Peter's detox and stuff. And he left that career field, went to another career field for guys like me. And he spotted me at a meeting. He said, I want to talk to you after the meeting. I said, okay. So I went out and said, what do you want to talk about? He said, listen, I've been here 3 times. You got something that I want to talk to you about. And he says, you know what? He said, I like the way you set this room up. He said, you set it up, don't you? I said, yeah. He said, I know. He says, well, go to my house and we'll talk. I went to his house, just like George. He went right down the list and he knew. And he says, I'm glad you're doing what you're doing, you know? He says, most people don't like that, but he says, I'm glad you're doing what you're doing. We became friends, you know, and then he got cancer and died in 2 months during the COVID. 2 months' time he died, you know, and you look at this guy, he was a pillar of health, and he'd done a lot of work. He was in the program almost 50 years, and he was still making amends after 50 years, you know, because he said, you got to do that. He said, some people think you stop. He said, don't stop, keep going. And that's why I keep coming to meetings, to listen. This guy, I got to hear that stuff, the power of choice. I need to hear that tonight, you know? And that's what, like John's always, I'm always busting on John over there. I tell him, you know, you can always tell an alcoholic, but you can't tell an alcoholic anything. I know, that's me. I know, I don't know nothing. I know is that I don't drink, I go to meetings, I read the big book, I read the 12 and 12, and I also have a sponsor still. And I have sponsees, you know, and those amaze me. As a matter of fact, two of my sponsees, one's celebrating his 76th birthday today. He's got 29 years. The other guy is celebrating 73 years tomorrow, and he's got 31 years. So, you know, and that's the kind of guys I hang with. You know, I stay with them guys because they stay firm to the program. You know, they stay to that big book. You know, you call them up and talk. They're not going to talk nonsense to you. They'll say, oh, yeah, my family's doing good. Let's talk AA. That's exactly what they say. And that's what I need, you know. I'm part of AA. I'm not part of the... See, there's two types of recovery. There's fellowship recovery, and there's big book recovery. It's your choice what you want to have. You know, if you're here to make friends, that's fine, you know. I'm not here to make friends. I'm here to share my story. You know, my experience is, if you come to AA, you do the work, you'll probably not drink. And you might even overcome that spiritual malady. It tells us, the ABCs, already being convinced, we're at step 3. It's not... Oh, you know, the chant they do now here. I'm not a person of that chant they do when they read how it works, you know. God could, would, if he saw. That's a chant. We're not a chanting group. We're here for recovery. We're here to treat alcoholism, you know. If you find friends here, that's wonderful. Don't get me wrong. But I remember when my first meeting, when Lou Joe said that, he stood up there and he said, if you're here to get your wife back, if you're here to get your kids back, if you're here to find a girlfriend, you're here for the wrong goddamn reason. If you're here to treat your alcoholism, you're here for the right reason. We're not a social group, but we do socialize after meetings and we do have events, just the way he put it. And that's what I like, you know. If you're here to get recovered, this is the place to be, you know. And you see it, you guys all around you see it, every one of you see it, you know. I've seen guys here change, a lot of people change. And I don't say, I just watch them change, you know. And I just come, people keep me coming, you know. Like I told you, me and were pretty tight way back in the day, but we were both sick back in the day. But when I seen them change, I said, wow, you know. And I think about all the people that left that used to be in my car that are dead. Most of them died sober. You know, the ones that died drunk were the ones that couldn't get the program. You know, there's many, many people that rode in my car that aren't here. And they could be here if they would stop drinking, you know. That's the start. But then you do the work, you know. And Pat knows some of the people that I know. I still see the original people. The guy that put his arm around me, I see him every Sunday. He just celebrated 55 years, you know. And the lady that Pat knows, she's there every Sunday at the meeting. And these people are old. They're in their 80s, late 80s, you know. I ain't gonna tell you how old I am, but they're a little bit older than me. That's all I can say, you know. So I don't drink. I go to meetings. I read the big book, and I want to thank Zane and Jimmy C, who ain't here, who set this up for me, you know. And Jimmy C, just so you guys know, I knew him when he was 4 years old. That's how long I've known Jimmy, you know. I know a lot of people in the program from their past lives, you know, and that's it. I learned here, you know. I don't know too many people these days, you know. I see Jerry back there. I don't know about Jerry. I see Jerry back there, though. You know, he's here. I just heard him say tonight he came in 1989. See, I was listening. I shouldn't listen, but I listened, you know. Ron came in 1987. See, years ago, I couldn't remember that, you know. But I remember things that people saying. Because I can't remember my own name sometimes. You know, that's part of getting old. But I sit here, and I want to thank you, Zane, for having me come, and thank you for reminding me. That's it.
How long, like 2 days back?
And he was getting people jobs in AA.